Well, I think I'll start with the most important message I could pass on today. We can get technical and talk about how precision medicine is being applied to cancer, but still, the best medicine of all is a healthy lifestyle. And having the enjoyment of listening to beautiful music and talk about great ideas tonight, I think, plays into that very well. So, there we go. Getting personal with cancer. I'd like to start just by reviewing briefly how cancer develops so we can understand how personalized medicine and genomic technologies can be used to understand it and to treat it. So, all cancers start from a normal cell that one day bad luck strikes, and a cell in your body of the 10 to the 14th or so that we have suffer some sort of genetic damage. And so the beautiful DNA code that we've just heard and talked about becomes disrupted. And in the early stages, these cells might just form a lump called a dysplasia. But if unchecked, those lumps can acquire further damage, further mutations, and form early stage cancer, which we call an in situ carcinoma, as illustrated here. And if that's not found or checked, then you can end up with an invasive cancer where the cancer starts, this lump starts actually breaking out of its local region and potentially spreading to other parts of the body, and that's when cancer becomes really dangerous. If we find these early cancers, they can usually be cured using surgery and perhaps some radiation therapy. But once cancers become invasive, again, that's when they're much harder to treat. So what's going on at a genetic level during this process? Well, just to get a simple point across, basically what's happening is there's a gradual accumulation of random mutations. So the initial genetic insult to the cell on its own isn't enough to produce a full-blown cancer. But again, if left unchecked and additional mutations and additional damage accumulates, you can end up with the perfect storm of mutations, which give that cell superpowers, where it can now start ignoring all the normal rules of behavior for cells and forming these lumps and bumps that can eventually lead to serious cancers. But these mutations are not directed in any way. They're thought to just arise randomly. And most of the time when cells suffer some sort of mutation, some sort of damage, they probably crash, just like your laptop would crash if your operating system became corrupted. So this probably happens a lot in all of us every day, but those cells just crash and they literally undergo cellular suicide and just remove themselves from your body so that they don't cause further damage. But once in a while, you get this series of bad luck where a cancer cell accumulates just the right set of mutations which give it these superpowers. And there's a process of Darwinian-type selection going on in these cells the whole time. So the cells are being selected for, if you will. Again, most cancer cells probably are unsuccessful and die off, and we never hear about them, never realize they were there. But once in a while, the right combination comes along and is actually selected for and becomes this full-blown cancer. So this is what that looks like after you've gone through this random process of mutagenesis and you end up with a full-blown cancer. This is a high-level view of what that actually looks like. So these are real pictures of chromosomes. On the left, we're looking at a normal cell. And this has what many of you are probably familiar with, the nice, beautiful arrangement of 23 pairs of chromosomes. So we've got, in a healthy cell, two copies of each chromosome, one of which we got from our mom, and one which we got from our dad. And in a real cell, they're not all nicely aligned like this. They're all jumbled up. But this is what they look like when you organize them properly. This is showing a cancer cell from a patient with breast cancer. Just one example of one patient's cancer. And you can see right away that the genome is really screwed up. We've got something like 5 copies of chromosome 1, 4 copies of chromosome 2 in this case, and you can even see these multicolored chromosomes. So this happens when chromosomes are cut up into pieces and then pasted back together in abnormal configurations, something called translocations. And you can see a number of these throughout this particular cancer genome. So it's as if we took this beautiful genome and put it in the blender for a few seconds and then allowed it to reassemble, and you end up with this cancer genome. So again, most of the time when you put your genome in a blender, the cell probably crashes. It ends up with a scrambled code. But this perfect storm of events can happen where you end up with a successful cancer genome, successful from the point of view of the cancer. So because these processes are random, it means that no two cancers are alike. So these are all breast cancer genomes we're looking at now from 6 different patients. And I've already shown you this one, but now I'm showing you 5 others. And right off the bat, I think you'll see the only thing they seem to have in common is that they're all screwed up. But the actual details of those screw-ups are different from cancer to cancer, again, because of the random nature of this. Now, this looks like a dog's breakfast, perhaps, of chromosomes. The good news is, as we go and start actually sequencing the genomes of different cancers and getting being able to apply informatic-type approaches, computational approaches, you can actually start to see patterns emerge, new music emerging, new tunes, which seem to be common amongst many cancers and end up giving us a better understanding of how these haywire genomes are actually working. But how do we, now knowing this, approach treating cancer? So I'll start with the traditional approach, familiar to everybody. And of course, there's all sorts of types, or several types of treatment for cancer, but let's just talk about chemotherapy. The conventional approach would be take drugs that generally target any rapidly dividing cell with a defective DNA repair mechanism. That's how most chemo works. And just empirically, over the last 50 or 60 years, effective combinations of these drugs have been found that work for many or most patients with a particular type of cancer most of the time. And so this has led to the paradigm of what you can see as a one-size-fits-all regimen that works, again, for some proportion of patients. And the way you can visualize that is if we look at a population of patients now who have a specific type of cancer, so these could be patients with breast cancer, colon cancer, whatever might interest you, but we've got a large population of patients now with relatively homogenous type of cancer. And this approach would be then to give all of them the same drug, along with, of course, the side effects and costs that go along with that. But knowing that only a fraction of the patients, some proportion, are going to benefit from the drug. So again, this is the conventional approach. So the patients now highlighted in yellow, given the drug, they benefit from it. That's been a worthwhile exercise for everybody involved. Patients in red have been given the drug. There's been the cost and the toxicity associated with that, but no benefit in this example. So one important aspect of precision medicine or personalized medicine for cancer is, you know, could we predict in advance who these patients who are going to respond are, so that we only give the drug to the patients shown here in yellow who are likely to benefit? And can we then spare these patients an unnecessary treatment and then also perhaps find another treatment for them? So that's, you know, sort of job number one with precision medicine is to be able to make those calls in advance of giving the patient the drug. And it's turning out to be much harder for most cancers than anybody might have expected. And we can discuss that during the Q&A. But so the other aspect, though, is what can we do for people who are found to not respond to the drug? They've still got their cancer, and they're looking for answers. So I'll just jump to the present now with the approach that genomics has enabled, and I'll tell you a little bit about what's going on in here, right here in BC. So this is the personalized oncogenomics project that the BC Cancer Agency in Vancouver. It's called POG for short. And the idea here is there's less emphasis on the type of cancer somebody has. You don't care if it's breast cancer, colon cancer, lung cancer, forget about that for a minute. And instead, let's look at the genome of this person's cancer. And let's identify, by sequencing the genome, the aberrant circuits that are driving that person's cancer. It's the mutations, but also what circuits and screwed up pathways do those mutations lead to. And then you try and identify drugs that might block those circuits and then give them just to that patient, that one patient, to see if it's going to help put those cancer cells, kill them or put them under control. So this is a very highly personalized form of medicine where we're putting a lot of effort into trying to help one patient at a time. So I use the analogy, or to me, it's a lot like opening up the back of your radio. If your radio breaks, of course, nobody has radios anymore, but if you had a radio and it was broken, of course, you'd open it up and you'd look at the circuitry and you'd immediately be confused and you wouldn't have a clue what to do to fix that radio. And frankly, that's where a lot of personalized oncogenomics is at right now. We can now get a picture of the back of the radio, but what we actually go in and start reconnecting, getting with our soldering iron and trying to rewire things, that proves to be very difficult. So this is what the back of the radio looks like for one patient's cancer. This is a breast cancer patient, but it could be a lung cancer patient. It's the point is it's a typical case. And this is a circuit diagram. I won't go into the details, but all these squares are different proteins in the cell, and they're arranged in different pathways or circuits. And it's these circuits that run the cell and normally tell it to behave itself. But in the setting of cancer, these circuits are running amok. And everywhere you see a star or an arrow, whether it's red or green, that is a site where, by sequencing this person's tumor, they identified a mutation in that protein and therefore have identified an aberrant circuit or pathway. So you can see this person's cancer genome is riddled with mutations in multiple pathways. So we've opened up the back of the radio and we found several transistors are burned out, several capacitors have been plugged into the wrong place, and on and on. There's all sorts of wiring problems, and now we have to figure out, is there a drug we could give this person that would somehow correct all these wiring problems or kill the cell just because it's got these wiring problems? So back to the patient now. Now we're just talking about one patient. We know something about the circuitry of their cancer, and now we can go to the medicine cabinet and see, are there any drugs in there that make sense from a biochemical perspective to treat that particular circuitry problem? And one then selects one drug or perhaps a combination of drugs that you think have a good chance of doing that. So this type of exercise has now been performed on over 350 British Columbians with cancer. And so we're starting to get a lot of data. And again, I'm very peripherally involved. This is the Genome Sciences Center in Vancouver who's really doing this work, but I'm fascinated by it. So what's been learned? First of all, this approach works beautifully, but not very often. There are some rare successes which are absolutely phenomenal when you see them. A great example being someone with colon cancer who was treated with a blood pressure medication. That's what was in the medicine cabinet and thought to perhaps make sense given her circuitry. And she had a phenomenal complete response to this drug. This is a drug you would never give a cancer patient to treat their cancer. But by thinking outside the box, this approach came up. So it's those examples, of course, that keep everybody excited about this particular approach. But the reality is still probably 90% of patients, this is not ultimately leading to better treatment for them yet. We're really learning that we need to understand cellular circuits better. It's far more confusing back there than we might have initially thought. We need more drugs. For most of the aberrant circuits that are found, there's no drug in the medicine cabinet to give them. Sometimes access is the issue, but more commonly, nobody's thought about this circuit before, and so pharma has not come up with a drug. And then the biggest problem, I think, really, is that cancers adapt as well. And so even when we get these really nice successes, they are often short-lived. And this is called the whack-a-mole problem. That is how it's referred to in oncology. So, you know, you can whack the mole right on the head with the perfect drug, and sadly, for the patient and everyone involved, especially the patient, though, other moles pop up. Other circuits get turned on or hyperactivated in response to knocking out the original circuit that you thought was the right target. And so again, you can get beautiful responses, but then the cancer might come back a few months or years later. And so for the sake of time, I'll stop there. I'd be happy to talk during the Q&A about other approaches to this, in my favorite approach being immunotherapy. But again, I'll leave that for discussion. Thanks.